Welcome in to another Tuesday night on the Nashville Soccer Show, where Nashville SC gets another 3 points on the road. The United States has a stud at striker, and Ronaldo is officially back in the Premier League wearing a Manchester United shirt. Alongside Lucas Panzeca and Davey Shepherd, I'm Will Bowling with you for the next hour discussing the beautiful game. And gentlemen, what a week it was across club and country. We start, though, where Nashville SC gets another huge result. We doubted them a little bit. Maybe I doubted them a little bit last week, but they came through once again on the road. Gentlemen, how are we?
Doing good, buddy. Look, it's a great result for Nashville on the road in Montreal. I'd kind of said I expected them to go out and do what we saw. You know, I think that's should have been the expectation of the team. Now, had they given us reason to doubt that expectation over the course of the first part of the season with the away results? Yes, they have. But now I think it's two away wins in a row, five wins in a row, and then only one loss in their last 15. So that's a pretty good run of form. Kind of remove that Miami game from the conversation. We're talking about just a pretty insane run of form. So look, they're climbing up the table. And when you look at the table, let me bring it up here. I'm not saying anything crazy here, I don't think, but they're 14 points off of New England, but they have two games in hand. So say that's, you know, two wins. That's only 8 points off top of the table. That's kind of crazy when you think that this team is only in the second year that they've got. Lucas, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely credit to Gary Smith, man. All the issues that we talked about, just the demeanor, the attitude on the road, the way they approached these games. They found a real balance between that defensive solidity, still leading the league in clean sheets, but being able to go for it and being able to manufacture attacks in an organized manner without leaving yourself exposed at the back instead of going all the way to one end or all the way to the other. A lot of these away matches, we saw them all the way in that one end where they're really sitting back. You don't really see them going for it. But I don't know if there was some sort of come to Jesus meeting in that locker room about their road form. Whatever Gary Smith did, whatever this team did in the building, it has worked, man. Back-to-back road wins after not being able to pick one up all season long, and there is a clear change in attitude when they are away from Nissan Stadium. And I think this Montreal game was a perfect example of it, the way they were able to create chances and then some of the last-ditch defending from Walker Zimmerman, Joe Willis, who leads the league in clean sheets, and then just that one clinical moment in the box. And, of course, it comes from Zimmerman, who I think was the best player on the field for Nashville against Montreal on Saturday. So hat tip to Gary Smith and this club for coming together and trying to shore up what was this team's biggest weakness this season, and that's their form on the road.
Of course, Walker Zimmerman coming up with that goal to give Nashville SC the victory on a free kick. Guys, here's the difference for me between Nashville on the road pre-Atlanta and now post-Atlanta. They're so much more clinical. I think they're so much more confident that this team is coming up with big results against big teams, and that confidence is translating into critical moments on both sides of the pitch. They are scoring in high danger opportunities. This was a big opportunity for Walker Zimmerman, who still had a lot to do when that ball comes in on his head and converts. And on the flip side, they're also not giving up these set piece goals as often as they were. In life on the road in Major League Soccer, you can't afford to make one, two mistakes in the buildup to a goal for the other side and still expect to win. To me, this is still looking like a lot of the same things. They're not having as much of the ball on the road, 41% possession against Montreal. But in those critical moments that define a game, they're winning those moments now versus having careless errors in defense that lead to set piece opportunities for the other team.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And look, let's get something straight. That was the hard game of this little road swing.
Yes.
Okay. That was the hard one. Montreal sits in seventh place. The next three, you've got Inter Miami. You've got Toronto first, dead last, just lost to Cincinnati to kind of cement their place with the wooden spoon, in my opinion. They're on 15 points. Then you've got Inter Miami, who sit in ninth and actually have been in a decent run of form lately. And then Chicago after that, third from the bottom on 23 points. So, look, Nashville's done the heavy lifting now. They've beat the best team they're going to play in this four-game stretch. This is the same thing I said last week. You got to go out there and just take care of business. And at this point in the season, even though you're on the road, taking care of business is getting wins against teams of this quality.
Well, and two, I think it's impressive they did this with the midfield they did it with and the 11 they did it with. And guys, I think at this point we just kind of expect that whoever is on the field in a Nashville SC shirt, it's the same identity and the same plan versus when a lot of the starters are in there. Dax McCarty, of course, begins his suspension. Yonder Cadiz wasn't in the squad serving his suspension. Not really a guarantee he would have been in there anyway. But this team actually had the hardest check mark that they have on this little road trip with Matt LaGrassa and Brian Anunga playing in midfield. That is what I think is a big deal, is that at this point, guys, it doesn't matter which backups are in, doesn't matter how Gary Smith rotates the team. It's the same team with the same identity, and that is much easier said than done.
Yeah, and that's not something I think this team accomplished at times in the early part of the season. I feel like their identity changed at times when they had important key pieces leave. But that change has really hasn't been more evident than in these last two games. Go back to last week against New York City. Davey, I think you said on this show, a draw would be a massive result against NYCFC, missing all the guys they were missing due to World Cup qualifying, Leal, Zimmerman. And they go out there and they crushed him. It was 3-0. They ran them off the field. And then go back to the Montreal game and missing Dax McCarty. Plug in Matt LaGrassa to play alongside Brian Anunga in the double pivot. And you're right, Will. They didn't have much of the ball, 41% possession. And technically, they were outshot 14-13. But of those 13 shots, 8 of them on goal. Montreal with only 3 on goal. Nashville with the higher XG. You've seen them be more efficient in the final third. And you're seeing contributions from every attacking player on the field. Not so much in terms of goals. Obviously, it's just a 1-0 win where Walker Zimmerman nods home a free kick. But CJ Sapong was lively. He was creating shots out of nothing, forcing saves. Montreal's goalkeeper, by the way, who had a phenomenal game.
Yeah, he did.
Daniel Rios, very lively on Saturday. It's really been fun to watch him come into form after finally getting back from injury. And then obviously, Hani Mukhtar and the whole MVP debate, leading the leagues in goals plus assists. You're getting individual contributions from attackers that you weren't getting from early on in the season. So they did not have a ton of the ball, but I think they're comfortable with that. I think they're comfortable with their defensive solidity and their efficiency in the attack to let teams have that possession a little bit. And then when they do get the ball, do something that matters with it.
Well, and from the beginning of the season, too, the problem was, we had all those offensive chances and you're scoring a couple of goals a game, whatever it was. But the other thing we didn't have early on, Lucas, was those huge defensive stops that we were used to seeing last year, like we saw out of Walker Zimmerman the other night. And that was just an outrageous last-ditch effort. Reminded me a lot of, I think it was one at home against Cincinnati. Or sorry, it must not have been Cincinnati. It was at home against Atlanta last year that preserved a win. It's crazy the plays that guy makes. And I don't know if it's just me insinuating or not, but that dude looked fired up after not playing for the U.S. men's. That's what it looked like to me. Looked like a little bit of irritation out there. I'm going to show how good I am. And he certainly did that. And to your point, Lucas, about giving up some of the ball, we saw that at home against New York as well, right? They gave up a good amount of the ball at home. Now, it was dependent on the players they had on the field, but were still absolutely efficient in their opportunities. And listen, I think let's give Mike Jacobs a little bit of credit here, right? We came into the season, all three of us said, hey, our biggest point of need is another DP quality, at least high TAM level quality midfielder, because Dax and Godoy aren't going to be able to play forever. And now we don't even act like Brian Anunga is a surprise inclusion into the side, right? He's just that good. It's pretty wild how much that guy has grown from the start of the season to now. And I think he was good in the minutes he got last year, but I think he's starter quality midfielder in MLS.
And on that point about them playing a good bit without the ball, we've seen that burn them right at times this season. I think back really early season, but like the Inter Miami game where they were very comfortable letting Miami have the ball. And in the end that burned them, a scoreless draw in a game where they should have gotten 3 points. That's happened throughout the course, at least in the first half of the season. So now you're seeing that shift where they're doing that, but then they're having possession with purpose when they do get the ball back. And you're right, what you said about Zimmerman, and I'm going to keep lauding Joe Willis every time we're on here. That dude deserves as much credit for this team's success, I think, as anybody on the field. I've already said it like 3 times that he leads the league in clean sheets, but nobody expected this type of this type of consistency from Joe Willis when he was brought over from Houston Dynamo. He has completely blown away all expectations. He has helped rise this team's floor as much as anybody, Mike Jacobs included, Gary Smith, everybody. And he came up big again on Saturday with yet another clean sheet.
It just feels like, guys, there's no one is a net negative in this team right now. Every soccer team that we cheer for, even when they're playing well, you have one guy at least that I think we would all point to and be like, gosh, that guy, if we can just get him to just give us a 6 out of 10, you know, you take away a lot of these mistakes. And not to dog on, you know, the first two games in Nashville SC's history, but you could point to a couple of individual errors early on in Nashville SC's existence that were costing this team from picking up big results. That's been the case when Nashville hasn't picked up wins this year as well. Obviously, the lack of finishing at Miami, the difference between Nashville coming away probably with 3 points versus zero. But you look at the scrutiny that a guy like Brian Anunga would have as a guy who's spent a lot of time in USL in his career, comes up and is really asked to play a different role than he was being asked to play in limited capacity last season. And I think he might be the surprise of the year for me. The way that he's been able to go forward with the ball and be more than just a number six and look a little bit closer to a number eight has been a really, really shocking development. 34 of 39 passes, 87%, 51 touches in the midfield in this win, and one key pass, three long balls, two of them accurate. It was incredible, actually, what he did next to Matt LaGrassa, because Anunga was just as much of an attacker for a lot of this game as LaGrassa was, who's typically closer to a number eight or number 10 versus a number six midfielder.
Look, I'd lump LaGrassa in with surprise of the season. That guy, I think he's now played just right at 500 minutes. Maybe it's right at 400 minutes. And the guy's just been so good. And we're talking about a guy who was on the fringe of getting called up. I know that for a fact. Like, he was one of the last calls from USL to MLS. And he comes up and, you know, I think minimal expectations, squad player, not going to make the 18. Last year, Will, we're getting surprised when he's making the 18, right? It's like, oh, wow, that's good for LaGrassa. That's awesome. Yeah. Good to see him out there, put on a shirt, stuff like that. Then he gets minutes and he just looks good. And I would say one game it looked a little bit past him for 30 or so minutes was New England away this year. And he comes out and plays fine in the second half, plays the whole match against the best team in the league away and secures a 0-0 result. It's just outstanding, man. And you can't credit Jacobs and Gary enough for having faith in those guys, what they saw. I think in MLS, anytime you bring a guy up from MLS and they are an actual contributor, sorry, a guy up from USL and they are actually contributing to your side, you've done really, really, really well. And that's what those guys have done. And it's very, very impressive.
And you know, and we've been critical about this team a lot this season. We've really honed in on some critiques that I think have all been valid. And one of those was the set piece defending, right? We hammered it all year long. I can't remember what the stat was a few weeks ago where it was like 8 of their 15 goals allowed were from set pieces, right? Like almost 50% of the goals they had allowed on the season. But when you fix those critiques, that's how you move forward as a team. And I remember saying, there's not that many teams in MLS that have that one clear-cut, glaring weakness that is holding them back, and that was one for Nashville. Well, they haven't allowed a set-piece goal since the loss to, the draw against Orlando City at home August 18th, about a month ago, and look what's happened since then. They've outscored teams 6-1 in the last three games, three wins in a row. So seeing them fix those weaknesses is showing us what this team's ceiling can be.
Guys, one major stat tells the story of this game for me. Coming up after the break, I want to get into the specifics on how Nashville SC's defense was so good on Saturday night against Montreal. Plus, we begin our U.S. Men's National Team conversation of the show. Ricardo Pepi is a baller, and we're going to devote a good amount of time talking about that because I still cannot stop smiling about it. It's the Nashville Soccer Show. It is 104.5 The Zone, and we'll continue when we come back. Welcome back into the Nashville Soccer Show on 104.5 The Zone. Will Bowling, Davey Shepherd, Lucas Panzeca with you as we continue to discuss Nashville SC's 1-0 victory at Montreal over the weekend. Two straight road victories for the boys in gold after starting winless on the road for so many of those games. Guys, when you look at the stats from this game, Nashville SC defensively, you talk about the crossing from both of these teams. Nashville had 8 crosses that were converted in the box out of 17 opportunities. That's pretty good at 47%. Montreal, on the other side, converted 1 cross out of 13. Just 8% of its crosses found a guy in the middle of the box. Whatever shape Nashville has gotten out of these last couple games with the inverted wingback on the right side with Dan Lovitz, with Taylor Washington, who I think is continuing to play an MLS starter caliber role at left wingback, it's incredible that this team has not given up any just freebie crosses after really struggling with that on set pieces for a lot of times at a lot of games early on in the season.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're exactly right. And how much can we attribute to that? Just like Walker, and I mentioned this, and it was not a topic of conversation a lot of places early on. I think it was a month into the show, I said, hey, I think Walker Zimmerman's the worst defender on the team right now. And that got a little bit of traction, and not everybody loved it because I know he's a very loved guy, and I didn't mean it as a shot at Walker. I think my exact example that I gave was, hey, I'm saying, like, I think orange is the worst starburst. I still love an orange starburst, but I just like red, yellow, pink better. So anyways, that was a while ago. I think Walker's just gotten back to where he was. The other thing that I think has happened is kind of just that midfield quality has gone up too, and I think – over the last maybe month and a half, we've stopped giving away some of the free kicks and stuff that we were earlier in the season, danger chances. And so to me, those are the two biggest contributing factors. I think Walker is now, again, without doubt, the best center back in the league. I don't know that he's going to win MLS Defender of the Year again, but I do expect him to be in the MLS 11. And when you've got a guy playing at that level, he's going to raise everybody else up with him. And so I'm not some tactics or data genius. I would leave like a Ben Wright or something to that. That's the biggest thing I've seen. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think this team has prioritized taking away those wide areas, which a big part of that too is having enough confidence in your midfield players to not get out of shape there and have your wingbacks take away those outside areas and not have to come inside and help Brandon Unga and Matt LaGrassa. This team is just fundamentally so good right now. That's the thing. We talked so much early on that this team wasn't good enough and wasn't offensive enough to make the mistakes they were making and still win. And now they're just not making those mistakes at this point. Like I cannot point to really any huge high danger opportunities other than that one we already mentioned where Zimmerman makes a beautiful a stop to deny a very short range opportunity for Montreal. I just was never really worried that this team was going to give up that late goal, which is so odd to me because that's been one of their weaknesses the entire season.
Well, and also, but on that attempt they got to, I can't even call that a mistake. The back heel for Mihailovic was just insane was to really get good. That ball over there. Like sometimes you just get outskilled. You know what I mean? And that goes to your point, Will. Yeah, like it wasn't like some glaring mistake like we saw for a half of the season. It was just a really good play, and you're going to have that every now and then.
So let's quickly talk about Ake Loba. Once again, because this is kind of a developing situation to talk about his involvement in this team or lack thereof. Thought it was interesting. The piece in the Tennessean, our guy Drake Hills writes it about why aren't Ake Loba and Yonder Cadiz playing, it's no disrespect to Drake. We didn't really learn much from that, right? It was just kind of like, hey, these are two good players, but Nashville's still winning. Like, yes, we I think we can acknowledge that as well. But I still want to see more of Loba in these second halves. I just don't know how you get him integrated when this team doesn't really need any more attacking firepower right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think as much as I want to see him, the results just don't jive with like some huge need of change. And I think that if you want to be a fan and sit out there and say, hey, well, if we're this good on offense, why the heck did we spend almost $7 million on a forward? I can kind of get that reasoning now. I cannot get the fan who's screaming ready to flip the table over because the $7 million forward isn't playing in this team right this instant. Because you're scoring goals, you're winning games, you're getting results. And hey, at the end of the day, The guy looks good when he comes on the field. It's not like he looks like some bum who's totally lost it. He looks good. So I'm totally fine with where it's at right now. Now, if it's a bunch of 1-0s, 0-0s, or losses or whatever, then yeah, you got to get him on the field earlier. You got to get all the points you can get. That's not where the team's at right now.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about that as a need, though, right? Throughout the whole first half of the season, a clinical DP, you know, attacker, a finisher, a guy you can rely on in the final third. We were talking about that as a need, and it was a need. I mean, it's a good problem to have when you make that signing, and then suddenly, you know, your attacking options round into their best form of the season all at the same time. That's what's happening here. And Gary Smith, after the game, said, I think we're still working towards the best shape, the best individuals, still a lot of competition. He said, as we move into the final quarter of the season, I'd like to think everyone thinks there's a lot of room to be involved. I have to think that's with Ake Loba in mind. So I don't know if it's going to take someone's form kind of dropping off for him to be a consistent force in the lineup. I don't know if he will be consistent in the lineup throughout the end of the season if CJ Sapon keeps this up and Daniel Rios continues to put in these shifts. And good problems to have, but it definitely lessens kind of our critiques and complaints when we talk about Ake Loba, us as a trio, not seeing the field when they're putting out these types of performances, coming away with 3 points, it's hard to find much to complain about.
Well, and it's one thing if it's just CJ Sapon scoring goals, right? Because then you could say, oh, you can get him on wide, you can do this and that. And we've even now seen Randall Ayall drop off just a little bit from the level he was at back there at the beginning of the summer. But you've got Daniel Rios scoring goals. You got Daniel Rios looking like the most, you know, active attacker on the field with his passing and stuff. Like, you've got Hani Mukhtar playing at an MVP caliber level, which I don't know if we want to get into that whole conversation from yesterday in media or not. And then, you know, like it's just kind of all across the board. So there's no just easy place to plug the guy in. And I say this all the time, and it's an old coaching platitude, and everybody knows it, but I just think it's always true. It was a big beef of mine with the U.S. men's national team, and we'll go into that next. But I think your best players got to be your best players. And I think that's what you're seeing from Hani Mukhtar carrying this team right now. The guy's quality is just outstanding. He's like, he's all over the place, man. He's doing everything. He's working back. And I think my favorite thing from Hani Mukhtar right now, it isn't the goals. It isn't the assists. He's like a pest right now. Yeah. Constantly. He's getting like a yellow card a game almost, right? I mean, he's doing all that stuff that, like, hey, when the best guy on the field is playing at this level and dudes are hacking at him and dudes are pushing him after the whistle and stuff, like, that's when you know that number 10 or that forward, they're getting under people's skin. In every single game, you see Hani getting into it with somebody else. And man, I love it. I think that's like, I think back, you know, obviously I'm a Chelsea fan. I think back to like Drogba at his best, and it's like everybody's hacking, or Hazard. How many times did that guy get fouled in some unreasonable? That's what I'm seeing guys do to Hani Mukhtar right now. I'm seeing him take shots after the whistle, and I'm thinking, oh no, it's not just us on the outside. The guys on the field know he's the best player. Every time he gets the ball, he looks like he's dangerous. And it's so much fun to watch, just from a neutral perspective even. I think you saw Tom Bogert write that article yesterday about him. Hey, this guy is playing at an outrageous level. If he was in any other market, he'd probably be getting talked about a lot more. But it's interesting to see. And like I always say, best player's got to be the best. He is. And, you know, U.S. men's national team-wise, I think the 18-year-old was the best player for the U.S. men's national team the other week, and he showed up too. So, I mean, if we want to go into that right now, I'm good for it.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, the other equivalent we have across the U.S. and Nashville SC is how quickly can these things change, right? We saw as big of a change in performance that I've seen for any of my teams in any sport from the first half of USA Honduras to the second half. We've seen Nashville SC have games that have completely turned on their head from one half to the next. We've seen them have just weeks, right? I mean, going from Inter Miami losing 2-1 to then winning against DC 5-2 at home. That would be the advice that I have for the person that's wanting to see Ake Loba and is disappointed in not getting to see the highest paid player in this team's history. Things can change really quickly. And one guy can miss a big opportunity, whether that's Sapong, whether that's Rios, and Ake Loba can get a game or a chance, and if he scores, then now it's his spot to lose. That's just the way this game is played, and I think we've seen it from Nashville SC, and we've seen it from the United States, as we can kind of pivot to that side of the conversation. Guys, I have never had a range of emotions quite like I did watching this Honduras match going from the first half of, my God, are they going to do this to us again this year? Just like they did 4 years ago, to holy crap, this could be the best team in CONCACAF when Ricardo Pepi's playing that way.
Yeah, no,
he could not have had more of a 180, because that first half was the worst performance that we saw from this team. Worse than the opener in El Salvador, worse than the game in Nashville against Canada. Those 45 minutes were so dreadful. They looked like they didn't want to be there. They didn't have any ideas whatsoever. The formation didn't look right. People looked out of place. James Sands looked out of place. And then just something clicked in the second half. And it's funny how good they were after Pulisic left, and how good they were without so many of these key pieces, without Weston McKennie, without so many guys that were missing. I think the game was on Wednesday, right? But yeah, so it finally just felt like they woke up. It just felt like that's the USA that we needed to see in El Salvador and against Canada. That it's as simple as that to me. They woke up and they have an option up front that they didn't have before. And if Ricardo Pepi doesn't get the giant bulk of the minutes and the starts at the number nine, if they're still going to try experimenting with Sargent and so on, then I don't know what we're doing here, because we've been waiting for somebody to just grab this position, say, no, this is mine now. This is mine. This is my team. And Pepi did that on Wednesday. It is his to lose at this point. And I think we're going to go insane if that is not the case when they come back for the next round of qualifying.
Oh yeah, it has to be the case. I mean, there's just no way around it. And look, I mean, I don't know that anybody hyped Daryl DK more than maybe me and Will did early in the summer, right? After the performances he was putting in at Barnsley, and then his early performances, I think it was Nations League. He played really, really well in the first game against Martinique, and then he kind of falls off the face of the earth. That being said, there's just no need to see anyone else start matches at the number nine position right now, because no one's done it. DK couldn't grab the shirt and say, this is mine. Sargent absolutely couldn't grab the shirt and say, this is mine. And he's gotten way more opportunities than DK has. And PFOC, I think, played okay. I don't think he has the talent level that either of those other two guys have, but I was willing to see it out there. I think his size alone gets him on a qualifying roster, just because he's something totally different to throw out there. But Ricardo Pepi, just a nose for goal, nose for his teammates. It's insane how good that guy is, that young. And Dallas just churns people. I mean, best academy in the league. It's insane. The guy is just outrageous. And he really saved the U.S. Women's National Team, man. I mean, that second half, four goals. I think he assisted two and scored one. Just an outstanding performance overall from Ricardo Pepi. Miles Robinson gets a goal too. Miles Robinson.
Anthony
scores the first one. Yeah. And I think I talk about another guy who's probably kind of pasted himself into the starting 11.
Definitely.
There wasn't a fullback that looked better than him to me. I don't think. Now
he
listen,
wasn't George Bello.
Right. And I still think that both Robinson and Dest are served better by having a back three. And I think that gets a guy that a lot of Nashville fans are interested in on the field, and in Walker Zimmerman. Personally, I think Walker Zimmerman next to Brooks and Miles Robinson is a really, really outstanding kind of back five, back three option. And that's the funny thing. If there's a criticism coming out of this first round, I think Ken Hurd on Twitter pointed it out after the Canada game. If you're going to criticize Greg Berhalter for one thing, it's been 2.5 years. We're now through one round of qualifying. I don't know that he knows what his best 11 is, and I don't know that he knows what his best formation is. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit weird. And so I'd, you know, we saw him play in the World Cup, the Gold Cup this summer, and it was almost a back three the whole time. And then you go into this game, and set of World Cup qualifiers, there wasn't any back three. And looking at the roster before it, me and Lucas said, this just sets up, he's going to be playing a back three. And it's like, we're clueless apparently. So anyways, I think it's interesting to see where that is heading. I still think you can afford to lose an attacking player if you go with the back five, because Destin Robinson are just so good going forward. Yeah. And I think if you think about it in the context, I tweeted it out a couple of weeks ago or a couple of days ago. If you think about it in much in the same way that Gary Smith plays a back three with this team, Nashville isn't sacrificing a lot going forward by playing it with two extra defender or an extra defender out there, because Lovitz gets so far forward. I think that's what you'll see out of Destin Robinson, and cover up some of their defensive issues by having Walker, Miles Robinson, Brooks on the field. So interesting to see.
Well, you're putting more quality in advanced positions by putting your fullbacks in those inverted roles in advanced positions, because these fullbacks are so good. It's been the strength of this team over the past couple of years, just like goalkeeper has always been a strength of this team. And by the way, Matt Turner, still just phenomenal in net for the U.S. men's national team as well. But credit Greg Berhalter's subs and how quickly that he showed his sense of urgency to get more quality on the field. Brendan Aaronson was terrific coming on for Josh Sargent, who I thought was pretty horrible in this game. George Bello, same thing. I thought he was really bad in that first 45 minutes. And guys, why is John Brooks so awkward and so uncomfortable right now? Sebastian Legette replaces him at halftime as the U.S. changed its shape a little bit. And Legette was terrific. Again, a guy whose stock has risen as much as anybody in this U.S. men's national team pool over the summer. But if there's anyone that's fallen a lot, it's John Brooks. But I don't trust Greg Berhalter to make those changes at the back, because he seems to be pretty certain who he has at center back and who he doesn't want to have, which is still somehow Walker Zimmerman. I cannot believe that after all the mistakes we've seen over these past couple games, Mark McKenzie in the Nations League, John Brooks in this game as well, this is the opportunity for Zimmerman to step into that role. And if he doesn't here, we just know that Greg Berhalter is just never going to do it. Right? Like, if Walker Zimmerman doesn't get a chance now, I don't know if Walker's ever getting a chance barring injury.
I think John Brooks, we would all agree John Brooks is the best defender in the U.S. men's national team poll, right?
Certainly the best center back.
Pool, I should say. Right. Best center back. And certainly nobody had a worse first qualifying window than John Brooks. No question, especially with that Canada game. I thought he was dreadful. But he's a guy that I just think with his ceiling and his physical attributes, he's always going to get that next chance. Now, I think he's gotten as close to playing himself out of it as possible. But I still think when we fast forward to 2022, knock on wood, let's say the U.S. qualifies for Qatar, I think he's starting. He's a fixture in that back line. But there's no question he's been dreadful in this qualifying window. Absolutely. And I will build off what you said about, you know, at least giving Berhalter the credit with the subs. I was so critical of him in that Canada game where just throwing stuff at the wall, like, oh, it's the 80th minute. We've been, you know, lackaday. Let me just throw these three players on with 10 minutes left. We'll see. Maybe something will happen. This time he did it at halftime. And I was even critical of it then. Like, oh, here he goes with the three subs at a time. Just maybe something's going to happen if he just throws these guys out there. And it did. It 100% did. They were more direct. Their attitude, everything about it. Pepe, a huge part of that. Aaronson, Anthony Robinson. He made the right changes, so I'll give him credit for this one. But still going back to that Canada game and the El Salvador game, there are still concerns there. You know, if this team doesn't come on and pick up where they left off in the next qualifier, then I think those concerns are just revived again. Because as great as that was to see those four goals and running away with that win, one good half out of six. Math is hard. One good half out of six. That's not good enough. That is not good enough in World Cup qualifying. That rate is not going to get you into the World Cup. So they got to build off of it. And if they go back to square one coming into the next window, then the concerns come right back into the forefront.
Yeah, and again, I think if there's another knock on Berhalter, it's that opportunity to opportunity with these players. You see a lot of reverting back to the mean. You see a lot of throwing the same thing you threw out there the first time, last time you had them. And so that will be interesting to see. I think it's mid-October, right? It's not that far, the next window. So, yeah, I'm interested to see it. And look, it'll be the other thing is as Delta variant numbers go up, are these European teams going to be given an out from letting their players leave? And I wouldn't be shocked to see that. And so there could be a potential where you don't have a Reyna, Pulisic,
stuff like that. So that in Brazil last week.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So interesting to see. But that being said, as much as we want to criticize, and I think we're fairly critical of the U.S. men's national team on this show, they got the result they had to get. 5 points is not the end of the world out of that window. I expected 7. 5 is not death. three would have been.
Yes.
Yeah. But hey, you go out there, you get a win on the road. It's hard to win in CONCACAF on the road. So credit to Greg Berhalter and credit to Ricardo Pepi because he's the one who sparked it.
Thursday, October 7th, Sunday the 10th, and Wednesday the 13th, the next three match days in the October window for the U.S. men's national team. Jamaica at home, Panama on the road. So we'll get to see another Nashville SC player go up against the U.S. And then Wednesday the 13th, it'll be the U.S. and Costa Rica, which could, again, be a Nashville SC player against the United States. One final thing on the U.S., guys, before we take it to break. I was really worried when Pulisic goes off injured. I thought that was a big concern. Credit to Brendan Aaronson being the same style of player when he needs to be as Pulisic, cutting in on the wing and being a creator, creating space in behind where Ricardo Pepi made some outstanding runs. Sebastian Legette filled in the space that Aaronson left on the wing a lot when Aaronson would cut in. The U.S. is in a really good spot here because when Pulisic isn't healthy, which the way that he plays and the way people are just going to hack him talking about that same thing, is just going to happen. It's just the reality of the situation. The U.S. needs another Pulisic style of player. Aaronson has a lot of quality. He's not up to Pulisic's quality. Pulisic's the best player to ever put on the shirt. So that's saying a lot. But it's nice that the U.S. has another player that can fill that creator role from the wing, cutting inside on his left foot from the right or vice versa on his right foot from the left. That's a luxury I don't think the U.S. has had in the past, to be able to put in another style of player to Pulisic when he's not available.
Well, and I think Aaronson's got an edge to him that Pulisic will never have.
Absolutely.
And I think that thing, it might not matter as much in a World Cup match, but in a CONCACAF match, it matters a lot. And that's why I think Reyna's probably the best player to ever put on the shirt, because I think he's got the skill and the edge. And sure, I think he'll end up being the best U.S. men's national team player ever. That's just me personally.
Yeah, no, it really hurt to not have him in that window. I hope he's able to get off that injury pretty quick. Before we go, speaking of best players to ever put on the shirt, Clint Dempsey as an analyst on Paramount, gold. Absolutely
so
love it.
Good.
A treasure.
All those guys were good, I thought. Like, I've seen a lot of complaining about, like, oh, why are these guys just fans? Like, after the, that's because we can relate to it. Like,
that's what you love about international soccer. That's right. Where you're allowed.
I know.
To
like,
you don't need to be objective talking about the country you're from and you play for, man. That's not the point.
In the country that all of us are from and watch it, like,
it's how it is around the world, man. It's the beautiful thing about it.
90% of the people watching that match probably are U.S. fans. Like, that's absolutely right. What we all want. Yeah.
It's the most beautiful thing about international soccer. It's what makes it the best sport in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's get another break. When we come back, let's jump in a little bit of Premier League. Arsenal wins a relegation 6-pointer. Lots of big results. And Champions League, gentlemen, is back. Let's get into all that and a little bit more. When we come back, the Nashville Soccer Show on 104.5 The Zone. Back with you for one final time tonight on the Nashville Soccer Show on 104.5 The Zone. Will Bowling, Lucas Panzeca, and Davey Shepherd with you. Before we get into Cristiano Ronaldo, the Premier League, and the Champions League, Davey, we love talking about Fat Bottom Brewery. Lots of away days coming up for Nashville SC, so some time that we will be spending with you, the people at their location in the nation's Nashville beer for Nashville SC and Nashville fans. And it is very good stuff. And that location in the nation's has become my go-to spot for soccer and not for soccer, because it's one of the best spots I think in town.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best patios in the city. Food menu is great. That you always say at the fish and chips is your game time meal.
Absolutely.
I get the burger pretty much every time. I just love
brisket
it.
Sliders.
Of habit. Brisket sliders. See, we all eat something different. There you go. So it's legit. And look, the $3 pitch invasions is the selling point, right? I mean, it's come on. Let's be reasonable. Everybody's looking for a deal on beers, and that's a great deal in game. Make it out there for the NSC matches. They run it during USA matches too, generally speaking, but we'll confirm that on social media before. So, we love those guys. They are our good friends. They take care of us. They'll take care of you. Make it out there to Fat Bottom this weekend for sure.
And that like seasoning they put on those burgers with the Teddy Loves Pilsner, like it's like beer batter. So good. So good. All right, let's get into Cristiano Ronaldo is incredible. Yes, he scored a goal that I could have scored at one point, but still, Like I saw this quote, and it was, I think, an old Sir Alex Ferguson quote. And it said, the way Ronaldo just changes the entire atmosphere of a game. Yeah. Every person that leaves Old Trafford or a Manchester United game all of this year, their takeaway is, I just got to see Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, it's incredible how this guy's presence just in the league changes the entire aura of the league, not just Manchester United. And I still don't think their team's going to win the title. I mean, I'm still wondering how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to mess this up. But still, it's pretty incredible, regardless of who you cheer for, to get to see
him. Davey, I'm going to call out Andy Simmons of Speedway Soccer.
Yes, for, I love that.
We're having this debate, and he's just, I don't see he's aging. I just don't see him keeping up with the physicality of the Premier League. I said, Andy, he's going to score in bunches, and he's going to score immediately. Think about who we're talking about here. This is not going to slow down. And I'm not going to pretend like I came up with this, but I was listening to Total Soccer Show earlier this week, and these guys do a great job. But they compared this signing of Ronaldo, because we talk about the deficiencies United has, right, and the reasons why they won't win the titles, the imbalance in midfield, who's there to complement Paul Pogba, some of those weaknesses. And the guys on the Total Soccer Show, an athletic podcast, talked about when United signed Robin van Persie in that title-winning season, where from Arsenal, Will, I know, I'm sorry, but the best goal-scoring striker in the Premier League at the time. And they went back and thought about who was part of that Manchester United midfield at the time. And Tom Cleverley was playing like 90 minutes a game. And that team just outscored everybody. And I could see that happening this season. They're obviously so top heavy, but I do think that solidity is there. I think Varane even is still the most important signing that they made.
Agreed.
In the transfer window. Even more important than Ronaldo, more important than Jadon Sancho. But I still think they can win this title by outscoring people despite those deficiencies in midfield, because they've done it before. I don't see him slowing down. You're right. He's a polarizing player. He draws people in. And man, that was so much fun to watch, that environment, just scoring almost immediately, two goals on the day and a dominant win. It's not going to stop. He's going to continue to score in bunches, and he's going to give United a chance to win this league.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think his kind of reinvention of himself of a player is maybe the most impressive thing throughout absolutely. His career. He was an out-and-out seven, wide winger, up and down the flanks, murdering people for pace. I mean, that's who he was when he 1v1. Even when he got to Real Madrid, that's who he was, right? It's not like they had signed some total forward. And then over the course of his time as at Real Madrid, you see him kind of drift more and more centrally. Those other guys kind of do it more. Him and Benzema kind of switching spots a little bit and rotating. And listen, then by the time he got to Juventus, it's pretty much an out-and-out number nine. You know what I mean? So the guy's going to score goals. He's going to be outrageous to watch. He's going to draw penalties. It's going to be a really, really long season for people who hate Manchester United, like myself. Yeah. And so just get used to it, because it's going to be annoying to watch. But you're right. As far as the only player in my head that I can associate it with, because I saw him play a lot in person live, is Alexander Ovechkin. And every time the guy's on the hockey puck, the whole room stands up. And I mean, he could have it in his own defensive end behind the goal, but everybody's standing up because they're thinking, what's going to happen? And right. It's a lot like that. I'm sure there's a lot of those other examples out there for people. Me personally, that's the one I draw on, because I've seen it a ton. Yeah. Every time the guy gets the ball, you think, oh no, he's probably going to score. And it's the other day he scored twice. So pretty good opportunities for him. As a Chelsea fan, I love it, because I think it takes pressure off of Chelsea. I think they're going to just kind of coast into a second or a third place finish and be in the race. And so I think all of the pressure is on Manchester United this year. And I don't know that Ole can handle it either. So either I will be right and United will win the league, or I'll get to enjoy another Ole collapse, which I'll like either way. So I like being right a lot, but I would rather watch United lose. It'll be interesting to see. Guys, Champions League starting up this week as well.
Yeah.
We got this coming out on Tuesday night, so some of those results are kind of trickling, had trickled in earlier in the day for us. But looking at the Wednesday games, anything that catches your eye?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Liverpool-Milan, Lucas, is going to be a fun one. Inter and Real Madrid, I think, is going to be a fun one as well. Borussia Dortmund going to Istanbul to take on Besiktas. That's not an easy trip to make. Manchester City and Leipzig. How does Man City adopt this year's difference between the Europe team and the Premier League team? Because Pep Guardiola has enough depth where he can just play two completely different teams in those two games. I think that one's going to be interesting. Atletico Porto in there as well, with Anton Griezmann back for Atletico, which, by the way, guys, is still like the transfer debacle of the century, that Barcelona paid for Anton Griezmann as much as they did and then just sent him back a couple of years later. it's incredible how Barcelona has just fumbled pretty much every single thing that they've done over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, no, and it's funny too, because Real Madrid has cried broke, right? I mean, Florentino Perez was super
ridiculous.
They've cried broke for all this time, and then Real Madrid submits a $200 million bid for Kylian Mbappe.
Next year, they're just going to have him and Haaland. Like, that's just what's going to happen now.
Because they can afford it. Barcelona is actually broke. Barcelona cannot afford anybody right now, and I'm not going to lie. I kind of like seeing that. It's kind of fun. My eyes are obviously on AC Milan. Liverpool. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is out. Milan, such an electric start to the Serie A campaign. 3 wins in 3 games, tied for the top of the league. Liverpool coming off a win. Also, Harvey Elliott, man, a brutal injury over the weekend against Leeds. Wish him all the best. Really young, talented player. But that's where my eyes are on Wednesday, guys. Liverpool, AC Milan. Milan returning to Champions League. 2012 was the last time I got to watch the Rossoneri play in this competition. Really unbelievable.
Hey, Lucas, real quick, who is Milan tied with at the top of Serie A?
I know. It's Roma. It's and they've gotten off to a good start.
They've been good, and Tammy Abraham's been great for them. So good. I'm happy for Chelsea stuff aside. I think he's just a really good young player who had stagnated under Tuchel and Lampard before that. Good to see him there playing well. It's going to be a fun league this year, Serie A. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
The exodus of talent, like the style of play, is still there. It is so much fun to watch, man.
And I hope that if there's one like non-Nashville Soccer Club takeaway from this show, I hope it's that people start watching Serie A more, because it's just a blast, man. And it I don't even know that people know that it was like the best league in the world when most of the people who listen to our show were born. It was the best league in the world, and I hope it gets back to that level one day, and you see a lot of rotation. And so that's my hope for you, is go watch some Serie A, because it is a freaking blast to watch.
Amen.
Love it. All right, guys, we got 30 seconds. Nashville taking on a Toronto team that has lost 5 in a row and 6 out of 7. They have
vaunted Toronto Football Club.
They have not won since July 24th. 3 points for Nashville Saturday.
Has to be.
Gotta be. Gotta be.
Last place team in the conference right now. Has to be.
I'll take Nashville 3-0 Saturday night. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. If you missed any of the conversation, we covered a lot. Nashville SC, U.S., Premier League, Champions League. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network under the Nashville Soccer Show. For Lucas Panzeca, Davey Shepherd, I'm Will Bowling. Nashville back at it Saturday night. We'll discuss it next week right here on 104.5 The Zone.